to blue sky. Please tell us why you had to screw a muskie so long.
All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. A Mr. Blue Jay.
Mr. Blue Sky. That's what they call me. Blue Sky.
I am not awkward.
Goodness. I'm a nice person. Believe me.
I am okay. Anyway, good.
I'm just playing around with my ChatGPT app right now. Just kidding. You gonna download? No, not going to happen.
What did you say, ChatGPT?
ChatGPT.
Chet Knudsen. He'll write anything. Jack Knutson will draw you any picture you want.
Knutson on the horn for me. He'll make the call.
Chet GPT. He'll draw them anime peoples for you doing all the stuff you want to see them do. Oh, my goodness, Jay.
So what's going on?
Well, what's going on is I already got emails. People are like, why didn't the podcast come out? Because what happened is I forgot to eat. So I had half a bag of popcorn and about 10 Pepsis and rolled over on the couch, and Jay's like, where did he go? So
things get late, you know, you got to be in top form. So
top form.
Here we are, Monday night, baby.
It's Monday, not Sunday. Sorry, everybody. My apologies.
Yeah,
you didn't miss. You didn't miss much. I tried talking to Jay. It was ugly. Anyway, other than that, so the comings and the goings at Muskie Shop. There's some cool new stuff. We're getting to the exciting part of the year. Really excited to see the Chaos Mini Tap Dancers back. The Shum Shums back. True Glides are back. Got some 3-inch grandmas. Jay, how big is your grandma? Has your grandma got a 3-incher?
We got a lot of stuff in today, but unfortunately, you know, it wasn't all true musky stuff. And a lot of it was just restocks, you know, you know, all these spoons came in. It's just like, just doing listings all day, taking pictures of baits, processing them, and putting new listings on the website, you know,
for
more
season.
Colors and more sizes and more models. And tiny grandmas.
Hold me closer, tiny.
Nobody's
grandma.
Got those things. So, we're like, bring some 4.5 inchers in.
Yeah, whatever. You get your tiny grandma out. So then, if you've not seen the Strike Pro, man, these are money. These are so cool.
If there's any left, yeah.
There's a few. It's not for long. Those are cool. I fish those. Those are hard plastic. They're really consistent. You know, I was going to say the early season aspect of the Shum, the mini tap dancer.
You love those things.
I do. It's been before the world health crisis, they were slow to get a little bit. Now it's even worse. I say that, and I think there's like 4 or 5 left is all. Ugh. Well, they're cool.
We'll get more. Chaos Tackle is up in production on those now, so things are looking better. It took a long time to get those. It really did.
Well, it just is what it is. Wood production rates is a pain in the keister. Guys, I did want to mention this because we've not said it for a minute. You got the Muskie Shop Bash coming up July 15th.
Yep.
So that's going to be me. I'll be there. Jay will be there. Elmer will be there in all his glory. You're going to have Joe Booker. You're going to have Stevie Herbeck.
Yep.
You're going to have Mr. Bassmaster Classics winner, Bass Fishing and Nado, Randy Howe. That's going to be really neat, I think, for anybody that's a multi-species fisherman. And the thing, you know, you go, what can I learn from a bass guy? I think more so than anything, just sort of that tournament mindset, and also big fish or big fish. You know what I'm saying? He's a crankbait master. That's really what he's known for. So I'm going to be able to get some tips and tactics from the best, Jay.
Yeah, I think you will. I think we all will. Yeah,
you
for sure.
You wanted the best. You got the best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's that. So there's that. Got new
hats. We've got some other. Yeah, we got new hats. We got some new. Yeah, some good looking hats, too.
Some good looking
with
hats.
With patches. Some have patches, some don't. There's like 9 or 10 new ones on the website.
I'm counting on you, son.
Yep. A lot of new baits and stuff is just rolling in, baby.
That's cool. It's far better than in January when there's nothing. And we're like, hey, what's new? Nothing. Absolutely nothing is new. There's nothing exciting to talk about other than the cold. Speaking of the cold, JSE with the Northwoods update.
Oh, you had to do that again. Well, let's put it this way. I was talking to my buddy B a little bit ago. He lives in southern Wisconsin, so he was asking, is old lakes open? I'm like, Brandon, no, the lakes are not open. But, I mean, it could happen in a week maybe. But put it this way, if the sun's hitting an area, the snow's gone. If it's shaded, there's snow cover. So it hasn't helped that it's flurried or snowed pretty much at least a little bit every day in the last week.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a kind of a sense of what kind of temperatures we're talking about here. Not really ice destroying weather. So it'll be a little late, but it's going to happen, you know, sometime in early May, hopefully.
Wow. It's crazy. I mean, that's definitely late ice out.
Yeah. It'll be a week or more late, probably.
You know, you just go into it and it'll be interesting to see sort of where the muskies are in their life cycle by the time season opens.
That's true. Yeah. You know, and how the weeds are going to grow. And there's a lot of variables that we don't know yet what will happen, pan out.
Well, I've actually heard some reports of some fish on some of the river systems already being caught here or there, scattershot, you know, people just fooling around, just fishing. You know, whether it's like, what is it, bass? I don't think you can target much anything right now. It's, what is it, panfish or whatever?
Yeah, well, yeah, Wisconsin's a little messed up with rules and regulations. But I think right now you could catch and release bass. But general season is closed, you know, say for walleye and northern pike and stuff like that. And obviously muskie. And muskie season opens in two different times of different parts of May. So, depending on if you're in the southern or northern zone. So I think it's Austin, Minnesota. Those are about the two last states that still have close seasons, you know,
Michigan's wide open. Illinois is wide open. Indiana. Yeah. I think it's back down to you guys where there's a season, but
we're special.
We're special in a lot of ways, Jay.
And so is Minnesota.
Minnesota. Oh.
Sota!
Well, our good friend Josh, the South American snowman that makes the planer boards.
Sure.
He was very excited. He said, I should be off where he's at by 4th of July weekend, is what he's thinking.
Yeah, well,
he's
gonna, it should be.
You know, they're going to be able to launch then if you take some rock salt and put it on the ramps. You ought to be able to get your boat in there. You might be pushing ice. But it's just like,
hey, have you talked to Joe Booker about all the flooding over by him? Because he's over by the Mississippi River at his cabin, right?
He texted me a picture the other day that there's some pretty good flooding. What did he say? It was just basically we were talking about some other stuff. But
yeah, I heard the Mississippi River is way above bank, so there are some problems in Wisconsin, and I don't know how far south it goes.
On Wednesday, he texted me. He said the river levels have jumped by 5 feet in a week.
Right? Lovely.
I said, stop texting me, right? And then he says, things are coming up. There's some in town. I said, new phone, who dis? And then he persists.
Normally he communicates with emojis, like I've said in the past, but like, so when you get him to write out words, that's a big step up for Joe. Sorry, man, just joking.
You know, he had some, they said there's some water coming up into town as far as like some different little areas, and that's when I blocked him.
You ghosted Joe Booker.
I just ghosted him. Don't reply. Thumbs up. There you go. Now he you know, he was looking forward, and I'm not sure what the – I hate talking about anything in Wisconsin because of the regs or whatever. You know, he was sort of bummed. He's looking forward to getting out on the river systems going for big bass and pike, whenever that might be.
In the big pike over there,
And it's going to be, I believe, a little bit of a messy situation. I'm guessing that if you're a river fisherman, and we need to talk about this anyway, because so many people are getting ready for – two different experiences. Season opener And we got a lot of guys fishing rivers, right? Shallow water. So I want to talk about, sure, before we do any Q&A or anything, me and Jay are going to delve into some thoughts and some concepts on shallow water. 5 feet or less, right? Because there's a lot of dudes that you target, that's it. That's what you got. I mean, there's some river systems I fish that 5 foot, 8 foot holes are about as deep as they get. So we'll get there in a minute. But, you know, it's going to be interesting, especially the Wisconsin River and everything that's happening up in your neck of the woods, with that much water, the amount of current that's going to be in play. I'm wondering, you know, what, Jay, you've seen it happen before. We have the, I mean, this is like nearly the record snowfall on recorded history. How much
it is here? It is here.
How much do these things swell up? What are we looking like on bad snow years?
By me, it's just up. It's normal. Hard to put it. Like the Eagle River chain, which you're familiar with.
Yep.
We finally got you out there last year with Joshy.
Oh yeah, and I've been dying, folks. 41 years, I couldn't get the action water. I had avoided it like the plague. It's like your friend going, "Let's eat at Chili's." No, I don't want to eat at Chili's. It's disgusting. Well, let's eat at Chili's. All right, we'll go to Chili's anyway. But continue.
Just they have some kind of regulatory thing that's like, apparently it's federalized or something like that, where it has to be kept at a certain level, like year round. Like it just can't vary more than a few inches or whatever. So, and everything downstream from that too is the Wisconsin River filled up, but I've never seen it become a problem by me. You just have to go downriver more, so probably south of Rhinelander at some point, south of Tomahawk, get into more central Wisconsin, then they get flooding issues like that and over the bank stuff. But
yeah.
I guess I don't know what your question was, other than
I just
haven't really experienced
river
that
rates, yeah.
If rivers are over the bank, I'm not going out there personally, but
well, there's a lot of water they got to move, you know. So whether that's the funny thing is you can regulate and dictate and legalize anything you want and put out a mandate, but water's water, you know? I mean, with that much snowfall, it's going to be higher, I'm sure. At least higher velocities. That's something to take consideration. But goodness, let's just get into it a little bit here.
Sure.
So many people asking, how do we target shallow water? So the first thing I want to throw out here is, when I'm thinking shallow water, and I sort of said it before, there's a lot of bodies of water. There's musky, especially East Coast, some stuff in the South, stuff in your neck of the woods, Jay. 7-8 feet max.
Yep.
Right? And these bodies of water, they have serious fish, but it leaves us playing a little bit of a different situational ball game. Right? So depth is relative term. We've said that before. So if the deepest hole in your river is 8 feet, that is the deepest water there is. Muskies don't know the difference. They have no point of view. They don't know any other body of water than the one they're in. So we got to look at, what can we do in shallow water to trigger fish, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, and I've gotten so many questions about this as of late. And sometimes when we go on these rants or these thought processes, of what do you do? So first thing that we can forget about, if this is the water we're targeting, are big rubber presentations that are heavy weighted out the door. Forget about them, Jay. Say it.
Forget about it.
Right? Deep running crankbaits. Say it, Jay.
Forget about it.
Forget about it, yes. So, you know, I'm not going to be looking at a big fork reef digger. I'm not going to be thinking about a Smitty lunge deep. Rarely am I going to look at a depth rider. If that's sort of the MO, right? Let's say that if the deepest water is 7-8 feet and I'm running an average 3-4 feet, I'm not.
Yeah, your mean depth 3-4. Right.
Right. I'm not really interested in any of these presentations. However, what I'm looking at is the application of shallow running presentations, like my shallow running bulldog, my shallow toothy tough, my shallow medusas, right? I'm looking at those as my jerk pull baits. I'm looking at no weight titans, mid weight titans, titan juniors for dive and rise. But really, more so than anything, I really start thinking crankbaits and small swim baits. So a lot of guys are going, what are the best presentations for these scenarios? So in my head, a lot of these shallow waters are streams, creeks, small rivers, right? And I think that sort of plays across the habitat range when we're talking this kind of water. Sort of these trouty, these backwaters. I think what comes to play in these situations more so than anything is differentiating between my shallow running crankbaits, right? Who is the shallowest? What is the running depth of you know what I'm saying? Like, because there's a difference between, you can't take a crane, a slammer, a shallow raider, a shallow invader, all the other brands of shallow running crankbaits. They all do not run the same manner, right? So I'm going to become highly analytical of my quote-unquote shallow running crankbaits to see which ones run a smidge deeper, a smidge higher. Where do they really fall in that water column where it's going to be effective on edges and tight stuff? Where I'm probably going to spend the majority of my time twitching, ripping, kind of stripping these baits back.
Okay.
And I need some versatility.
Okay. I'm just thinking, you're saying you're keying in more on running depth on these shallow presentations than 3 to 4 feet. I'm personally thinking more on vibration and actual retrieve speed.
Well, that plays.
That's my key. Yeah. That's my key. Like, you know, like for example, the 6-inch slammer with the round lip.
Right.
Classic minnow bait kind of looks like a 6-inch grandma or a 6-inch Jake. They're all in the same ballpark. They all have the same type of action. You know, Bill Schwartz from Slammer Tackle came up with that fatty minnow, same length. It's a round body. It's got a square lip. Totally different ball game. Now, that bait's not going to light them up day in, day out on any kind, you know, on any particular, you know, on any type of water. But in the cases where we brought that out and tried it, it was on fire.
Yeah, it was on fire. But what I'm pointing to, because I like where you're going with action. My commentary would be, the gap that we got to close some days, even in shallow water, is just as important as the gap we have to close on bigger water.
The gap.
The gap between you and the fish, the proximity therein, right?
Okay.
So let's say, theoretically, just give me my druthers for a second. We are post-frontal. We are on moving water with a little bit of a drift. And we're going to throw minnow baits. A slammer that's going to run higher on a short cast or a medium cast might not be as effective as, say, a shallow invader that's going to achieve depth quicker and get down in the nitty-gritty. When I'm saying to draw the line between your shallow running cranks, what I'm saying is, don't look at all your shallow running cranks and think of them as interchangeable. Consider them to be individualistic tools where we're going, what attributes do these bring to the table, right? Because, and as Jay said, forget about it. Guess what? We don't have any longer. We don't have deep cranks. So we need to look at our shallow running crankbaits. What are the deeper of the shallow baits? Or are we going to augment our crankbaits to get them down and tight? Because at times, it takes bottom contact. It takes prolonged contact. And it takes a tighter proximity, even in 2, 3, 4 feet of water can be the difference, right? At a certain point, you're definitely going to have the visual appeal. It's undeniable, and that's what's interesting in shallow water. We have taken away the proximity game in musky fishing pretty much except for bottom tight. Are they up off a cover? Are they willing to move? And that's kind of an interesting thing in true shallow water. Are they?
In true shallow water context, more important than it would be in a deeper situation.
Well,
that's what you're drawing the line.
Yeah, yep. In a deep situation, let's say a lot of lakes. There's a lot of lakes that people target muskies in, and most, you know, let's say it terminates the main basin, sort of levels out, say 25 feet, for argument's sake, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's opened up from 0 to 25. That we need to be able to proficiently target. Shallow water means we need to be able to proficiently target a small section of water vertically, right? But we're going to still encounter the same problems we do in big water. right? So we still have to close the gap where we can get near in front of the fish, but it's a much smaller gap because proximity comes into play. So if you think about, like, in true shallow water, a muskie's deep water refuge might only be 6-7 feet. We're still going to need to get there at times, right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's say cold front situations on a shallow river. And let's say on this shallow river, we're aware of two or three holes that are slightly deeper than everything else. You're going to find a big populace of muskies hunkered in those deep holes at one time. Now we got to target them, right? And a lot of times in shallow water in my brain is small cast, short cast, right? We might not be able to run a DR is what I'm getting at. So we need to sort of analyze our baits and understand what's the running depth difference inside that similar bait class. Because not all shallow running crankbaits are the same. The next thing I would say is we need to make an analysis of our glide baits.
Sure.
Right? So I just grabbed one off the wall here in the bait cave. In the bait cave. I've got, what is it? I call this 7.5J Phantom. Aren't they 7.5 like the standard?
7.5. You get it.
7.5. You know, love these baits. They got a good hang to them, right? So,
yeah.
Viable bait. But, you know, let's say, what's a bait that would not be good in a shallow water situation on a glider?
I just got a text from Jeff from Phantom, the guy that makes Phantom.
What'd he say?
He's working on some top secret colors for me. Uh-oh. Can't tell you.
Bring it on. So,
this looks awesome. Oh, my goodness.
Uh-oh. Teaser. That was not planned out. That's just how it goes. He
just, like 5 minutes ago.
We're not doing the podcast nocturnally. But, you know, let's say the comparison to be made between a Phantom and a Hot Tails, right?
Okay.
I love
Hot Tails.
He makes a great glide bait.
Yep.
Generally a heavier glide bait. So the consideration will not be running depth. Running depth is a mute consideration on a glide bait in this scenario. It's waiting. Waiting becomes a matter of hang time and how slowly you can work the bait.
Yeah.
So the suspending nature of the glide bait or whatever presentation we're looking at needs to be taken into consideration. I'm looking on the wall here. Daryl's bait, Jay. Warlock. I'm looking at one right now.
Bit and tackle, sure.
Yeah, bit and tackle, Warlock.
I like those.
Great bait. Seems to depend on how you have the tail changed. Runs a little bit deeper, falls a little bit quicker. So on my glide baits in shallow water, I'm looking at hang time, suspension, rate of fall. Okay? That's the consideration that I'm taking in. I'm going, what bait's going to allow me to have the most hang time? So if I'm supposed to be working glide baits, conditions are saying these fish are going to be negative to neutral. They need a little hang time. What's going to be the bait that's going to sort of set there longer to get attention?
Mm-hmm.
And that is a comparison of minutia. It truly is. The rate of fall, the rate of descent between this 7.5 Phantom I have in my hand and a 7-inch, what's Anthony's baits again, Hot Tails or a bit and tackle Warlock. If you watch them side by side, it's not a big difference, but there is a difference, right? That's what we want to consider. So yes. And no, does it matter, like in 3 feet of water, does it matter that I'm proximity gaming him as much as my control? And this goes back to the crankbaits and the running depth. My speed control, right? So if I'm fishing true shallow water, and I'm coming full circle here of what I start on crankbaits and why I'm considering the minutia between crankbaits, why I'm looking at the minutia between glidebaits, is it controls my speed of retrieve. Right? A slightly more suspending, a slight more hang time in a glide bait allows for a slower, more methodical retrieve. Right? Bop, bop, hang. Let it hang. Bop, bop, hang. Opposed to this quicker descent in shallow water forces your hand that you got to keep it moving. Right? The same could be said with our bait selection to the big rubber one. I said, if you're fishing that shallow stuff, don't worry about a standard weighted anything. Go with shallow presentations where sort of backwards from what I would usually do, Jay. And you can, when we talk big rubber, let me hang this up here, hanging up the Phantom here. Generally, okay. When I talk big rubber, I'm a bull guy, bulldog or a toothy tougher at heart, right? I like Medusas. I got nothing wrong with them. It's just, you know, my cup of tea's always been a dog or the big toothy toughs. However, in shallow water, I generally lean on a Medusa. And you go, why? It's the flat bottom.
Yeah.
I can get away with just a little bit more extended hang time. Wham. Wham. That's something to consider. Another thing I bring up, and we don't talk about them too terribly often for you guys that are fishing shallow water, though, this is something you consider, is the manta. If we're on
Well, I'd like to mention two other ones, too, that we never, ever have brought up
LP
in my mind.
LP Paul Bear.
Yeah, Undertakers and Slammer Drop Bellies. Mm-hmm. Those have a slower descent. They're probably closer to like the half foot a second.
Yeah.
Most factory made, you know, the plastic ones, foot the more second. Mass produced style, you know, your Hellhounds and such, are much closer to like a foot a second, you know, countdown type descent. So when you're talking hang time, try an Undertaker if you want to slow down and have kind of an erratic side to side glide. Same thing with the Slammer Drop Belly. Some people are going to kill me for mentioning that one because it's a secret for them, but it's a good bait.
No, it's just something to consider because we've gotten so many emails about it. A lot of you guys might be rolling your eyes going, I don't fish that shallow stuff. Yes, you do. You do in the early season. That's why I've waded into this because I got a bunch of river guys asking questions, right?
Mm-hmm.
We are all in this scenario early season. We're up in the nitty gritty post spawn looking for shallow fish. And you go, why aren't we catching anything? Because every bait you're throwing has a too hard of a dive curve or it falls too fast and you got to work it too fast. You got no finesse up shallow, right? That's why that early season people rely on like French blades, giant killers, and rattle traps because they can't, they got no finesse. They ain't got no finesse, Jay. They got no finesse.
Ain't got it.
But, so I'm preaching to the pre-spawn, post-spawn guys while we're talking rivers here. So keep your ears open.
Ooh.
Something that I would consider in the same scenario, and I love that you brought up those baits. Like you said, that Slammer Belly Drop, super easy to work. And that bait, what's the cool trick with that bait is it looks pretty good on a straight retrieve, too. It's
small, too.
It's small.
It's a smaller presentation.
You know, that's a tap, let her hang, tap, let her hang, reel it. Get it. I'm not saying, like, throw it out and reel it in. I'm saying you can do some funky stuff just with your reel with that bait to get a little rock and roll out of, which is interesting. But you said, too, though, I mean, if I'm fishing shallow water, a hell hand is going to be consideration if I feel like I need to get down a little bit.
Yeah, and they go. Yeah, that's a faster thing for me.
Yeah,
I like Hellhounds, but it's a faster bait and it gets down quicker.
And you go, the premise I set forth was 3, 4, 5 feet. You got to be kidding me. You're telling me that matters? Yes, it matters. Right. So let's say Jay, theoretically, we're fishing a shallow river and we've done it together, right? Let's say it's 4 feet in the section we're in. Not a lot. Yeah, a muskie can see every bait that goes by it, but depending on conditions, closing that gap is important, just as important as it is in deep water, right? And I'm not a big advocate of quote-unquote reaction strikes, but if I put it in his face and I make him look at it, I'm more likely to get the response I'm looking for in bad conditions, right? Now, another thing I would consider and think about if I'm a shallow water fisherman, this is, you know, your bread and butter shallow water, is augmenting some of these mid-size shallow crankbaits. So probably the ugly duckling of the Booker line is going to be that 7-inch shallow raider, right? That is a bait that it's got a little bit of a cult following, but most people, Jay, are throwing the 5-inch shallow raider, right? and you go, okay, I like my, you know, my cranes, my slammers, you know that. I do like that 7-inch shallow rater as a twitch, sort of a hybrid thing, you know, the a la Booker, Mr. Hybrid retrieves.
Yeah, yeah, half jerkbait almost, yeah.
But really forgiving and current and really easy to, like, reweight. And I'm looking, hold on, let me pull it down here. You know, I'm looking at one here where me and Joe, it was funny on a trip, we got a fish on this guy. You know, I've taken the middle hook off. I've put a little bell sinker on the center of it, right, on that middle hook hanger. Two slightly larger hooks, and this thing is just a nasty, like, shallow water jerkbait, right?
You got it almost dead neutral?
It's a slow rise.
Very slow rise, okay.
Real slow. But that's handy, like I said, of fishing these rivers. That temperamental aspect of muskies, you know, like, for you guys that fish lakes, you know exactly what I'm saying. This temperamental, the difference between running a foot down a little deeper in the water column versus 1 foot up, you've seen it happen, right? Okay, I slowed my presentations. I got my spinner bait down. I started having action. How does that not apply in 3, 4, 5 feet of water? It applies across the board. And I think a lot of shallow, true shallow water musky anglers struggle with that concept to go, the gap is only 4 feet. Of course, if a musky wants it, it'll come up for it. Well, what's the difference between a musky that's in a weed bed and a bucktail blew over his head versus a spinnerbait ground down in the slop and got his attention? None. Am I wrong, Jay?
Mm-hmm.
Right? You got to close the gap in shallow water in subprime conditions. So that takes, again, intelligent, smart bait selection, right? Differentiating your crankbaits, your shallow crankbaits. What are the shallowest of my crankbaits? What are my mid-depth shallow crankbaits? What are my deep, shallow running crankbaits? And you go, what do you mean by that? Think about it. What shallow crankbait do you have that maxes out at 4.5 feet? You know, what maxes out at 3 feet? And thinking of it that way, we're drawing these demarcation lines in our own tackle box and then augmenting these crankbaits. Because when I think shallow water, at least in my experience, you know, I'm not thinking of some shallow lake that's 4 or 5 feet deep. I'm sure one exists. Somebody will send me an email about it, but I'm primarily thinking rivers and streams and creeks.
Yeah, primarily, right.
And in that scenario, crankbaits are just going to excel because current's present. We're talking about our gliders. I said the river run. I like the mantas just because they have a ridiculous hang time. I can run really, really shallow if need be. And they really are forgiving in the current. Back to, and I sort of picked on it a second there where I said the rate of fall. The warlock is sort of in the same school there where a warlock's going to run upstream pretty well, right? So you can get a upwards kick. That's one thing for you guys that are fishing moving water, shallow water. You'll notice that, you know, your glide baits, they work one direction, Jay, downstream. You know, walk, you know, this sort of hunching, lop-legged, sloppy retrieve. That's not going to fly. It's really not going to get trigger a fish. So, you know, the manta and the warlock. What else, Jay, have you seen? You said it before. I know the belly drop will do it. What else will go upstream as far as gliders, as far as getting a little slice in the water?
Well, like you said, the mantas, but they have a shallow version called the super shallow manta, I believe. Yeah. Much slower sink rate to it. Slammer drop belly. There's a little known company called LMP. So they got that Undertaker, which is the wood one, and then they got the plastic one, which is the, help me out here. You mentioned it before.
Undertaker.
No, not the Undertaker.
Let me look here on the website.
But yeah, they're very similar. One's plastic, so.
Paul Bearer or Undertaker.
Paul Bearer, yeah. Dark stuff, but, you know, hey, they work. Bah. They've been around for a long time. They're good little baits.
Straight
but
from the pits of hell. Very slow.
It's a tap. It's not a pull. It's a tap that bait type thing. Tap so you got to have patience with it.
Tip a tap.
Little smutly dogs.
Smutly.
Jay, 5 or 6 inch.
Keep That's it out of the gutter. Smutly.
You know another one? Another one would be a Mercer Creek, the small Mercer Creek by Smitty Tackle.
I've sworn off.
That's kind of got a round deal.
I've sworn off all Smitty baits until after the cage match.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about the feud.
That's a great bait.
Still a good bait. Yeah, that's a good one. You know, and if you ask Jake or Russ Smitty Smith, they'd say, oh, no, 6-inch jerk. That's what we're running in the spring. But I like the little Mercer Creek just because it's got that. I caught one of my first muskies on a bait cylinder that was called the Dick Grice Striker, which, and they're kind of patterned after that it's got that drop belly type front and around. And it's got a nice little wiggle and a little side to side, but more erratic than a perfect glide. There's perfect glide gliders and there's erratic gliders, wouldn't you say? Two categories of them.
I'll tell you flat out, the kiss of death glide bait fishing is getting that nice side to side, side to side, side
yep.
to side.
If it's working too good, make it work, like, not so good.
Yeah, work, make it. You got to throw in some trash every now and again. And
That's it.
I was the victim of that for a lot of years. We're like, oh, that looks good. There. It goes left to right, left to right. You know,
everybody now,
cha-cha slide. And you're going, wow, why am I getting follows? Because there's nothing there. It was a little too smooth.
Oh, you know what? You know what? We're not, you know what we're missing here, Steve, is those, the shallow swimming dog.
Yeah.
Both regular and mag. Yes. Especially the regular early season dynamite bait.
Dynamite. No, yep. It's kill. I mean, that's killer. What? How do you apply them on the river, Jay? What's sort of your game plan with those? You twitching, you ripping, you twerking, you jerking, or
not ripping? No, more like slow pulls. Pull, stop. Let it fall a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Bring it up. Yeah, you don't want to overwork that bait. That's the key. Ooh, what was that? Hello.
That was my phone because we're doing it. We're doing it early in the day, and somebody just texted me something stupid. But I mean, we've done well on those fishing together just on a straight retrieve as well, which is, you know, nothing special with those baits. But in shallow water, again,
yeah,
look at that rate of fall,
an all rubber bull.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just it allows for a little bit of versatility. Again, like I said, shallow water, you know, you've got to close that gap and consider that these fish are going to be bottom tight. Well, it might be 2 feet, but that foot will make a difference there. You know, just hitting this thing from every angle, we talk presentations. I would say patterning in shallow water, it's not as if it's easier than on a lake or easier than depth. I think the minutia matters. Like I said before, I think that you got to be really considerate of how you're presenting your baits. Again, when I think shallow water, I think moving water in most situations. And that speed control, because there's only certain speeds that muskies are going to respond to on any given day, right? Not everything can be fast. That's what we're talking about, presentation. So
yeah,
I think you need to be smart in your casting. Now, casting in moving water, a lot of times if you're leading the boat, let's say you're drifting, if you're casting ahead of the boat too far, it's going to mess with your action. If you're casting behind the boat too far, it's going to mess with your action. I think there's something to be said in the importance of casting, you know, slightly ahead of yourself, but not too far ahead. So you have good action, but by the time you're to the bait, by the time the end of that cast is coming around, you're setting yourself up with the vigor eight, that we're not lagging too far behind or dragging. Because I think that's one of the big kisses of death fishing in current. Is if the bait gets behind the boat and now current is influencing it, we're basically dragging the bait forward. That's something to look at, right? Or again, if you're casting too far ahead, the current's taking the bait downstream. Really getting straight in, slightly ahead of the boat, just ever so slight ahead of the boat cast in current's going to be important to retain that action all the way to the boat.
I think you're right.
You know, and you really need to calibrate that, per presentation. I've been doing it, especially this year. We've had so much funky weather. There's some stretches of river that I've been fishing, drift boat fishing, believe it or not, super shallow, right? Little river. Titan Juniors, great. I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but toot. Absolutely devastating in shallow rivers and shallow water. You can make the bottom contact. You can work it high. that's been really good, because dive and rise is really not something a lot of shallow water anglers have been able to do, because if current's present, you can't work them, or, you know, they're too problematic. So that's something to consider. Jay, I would say this, because a lot of the water you fish is shallow. The importance of spinner baits. Have at it. Take over, Jay. Talk spinner baits.
Talk spinner baits?
Yeah.
Safety pin style spinner baits?
What other kind is there, Jay?
Yeah, some people classify bucktails as spinner baits too.
Well, they're morons.
The importance of spinner baits in shallow water. Well, kind of brought that up a few weeks back. I like them as a slower presentation. It depends on if you're using them in and around weeds. Sometimes early season, you know, there are no weeds to contend with, especially on rivers. They're just not, or they're not up high enough where it, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Where it's of the utmost importance. It's, they're just starting to grow. So they're not really holding a lot of habitat. So, I think that's where wood and slack water come into play. You know, the muskies will often be just off the faster moving current, and they'll be kind of in a slack water ambush type situation. Right. So, I want a slower presentation. They're not looking for something going 100 miles an hour with the current, you know, blitzing by them. So, yeah. Spinnerbaits hold that trick, and I use them a ton on the river, and they catch everything too, not to mention big walleyes and smallmouth. But, you know, I start out with a little bit, you know, downsize, you know, half ounce stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's generally the key until midsummer, when I'm going a little bit bigger with the presentation. So once again, I'm very excited about the Titan Junior for river fishing this spring. And, it will be Titan Junior and spinnerbaits, for the near foreseeable future for me.
I mean, for me, I like spinnerbaits in that scenario. And I would say if I'm a true shallow water, that's what I'm targeting most of the time.
Well, again, and I work a lot of wood too. There's a lot of downfalls, and it's downfalls, whatever you want to call them. And they come through because of the weedless nature of them. That's something you can get right in there, because you have to.
Yeah. And what I'm targeting down in the South is rocky. And I like to be able to crawl those baits. Now, something you'll notice that I'll do in shallow bodies of water. In a lake or normal situation, you're going to see me opt for a willow leaf blade, right?
Yeah.
Now, that's to get the bait down. What I like to do in shallow situations is opt for a Colorado, right? Which keeps that bait a little bit more upright when I'm crawling it. I'm not worried about depth. I'm worried about slower speeds. So there's more lift on a Colorado. So a slow retrieve Colorado, I can creep a little bit easier in these shallow, rocky situations.
Yep.
And so your blade selection, we've talked about on the Blade Master Quest. Jay studied the blade. He is a master of the blade. He went to Okinawa and studied the blade with the greats. But, you know, being able to have that little bit of lift there is important in these shallow water situations, because you go, okay, well, you know, he's opting for this and the willow is great. In the shallow water, you're going to need a little bit more speed to keep that willow going, where in shallow stuff, Colorado, yeah. And then I'm going to opt for, if I want a little bit hotter, maybe Indiana, it's sort of the adverse in some capacity of the lake plan. Where, you know, you can just take, say, like a figure eight. Obviously, I'm biased. I love the figure eight stuff. Or you could take a rough dog, rough tackle, whatever it might be.
Yeah, and if you want to go downsize a little bit, we finally got some new ones in today, these CS lures. They've got this little half-ounce model, and they're pretty tough. And you can catch muskies on them. I have. And they got half-ounce combinations with willows and Colorados, and that'd be a good option, too.
Well, it's just something to consider in this shallow water scenarios, because I'm not thinking 3-4 feet, I'm going to throw my double tens, right? Mm-mm. Not happening. Goofy. Get something better to do, right? But making that bottom drag contact. Now, the other thing I'll say of this is it's an oddity. When I'm fishing shallow, that shallow of water, excuse me, for some reason, there's one bait in it. You'll know it, Jay. Shumway. It's a big grub.
It's a hot gross, tail?
It's like a freaking beetle spin.
Yeah, hot
head. I just pulled it.
Hot head. Yeah.
Shumway
yeah.
hot head. Pretty interesting. It's an overgrown Johnson beetle spin.
Yeah, pretty much. Right. No skirt. You know, just like a grub on a safety pin style with a Colorado. And then, a small Colorado.
Yeah, and you can up that. That's what I'm doing with
sure,
it.
Yeah. Clip one on. Yeah.
Right.
Piece of cake.
Unless you want to catch the crappie of your lifetime, folks, smear some power bait in the ribs. Jay, the reason that grub is ribbed is so it can absorb as much Dr. Juice and power bait as you can jam on that.
So thing. I'm reefing on this horse. Reefing. These guys over there, they can't believe it. Berkeley power bait out fishing live bait two to one.
Unbelievable. Should have seen the look on their face. Say it. Finish it.
Don't let luck or feeling determine your fishing success.
That's all I got.
Yeah.
Folks, you know, Jay used to shoot the string commercials in the 80s. It was disgusting.
I had the satin jacket and everything.
He did. It was a
never wore it, but I had it.
It was actually a Pantera tour jacket. He put a string patch on. So that's just
gotta make do, baby.
Gotta make do. That's just an interesting little configuration there. So let's talk about shallow water, and we're riffing here, guys. There's so many of you guys fishing this funky water here, these trout water. One thing I'll say is this. If I'm a pure shallow water angler, I'm not going to overlook the impact that a fly rod has. Boo! Boo!
Boring!
Boo! Can you make musky fishing any worse? Well, folks, we've got flies. The hang time. It's a hang time thing, right?
Yeah.
A streamer hangs out there forever. I got fly trips. Don't, you know, burn me at the cross. Oh, he's gone Fruit Loops on us, boys. He's got a fly rod. But it's impactful in those situations when you really need extended hang time. And we're talking about closing the gap in proximity. It's either proximity or extended hang time. Current shallow water with a hard bait, it's hard to get a bait. With a hard bait, it's hard to get a bait, right? With a hard bait, it's nearly impossible to get a bait that will suspend for longer than a second or two before you got to work it, right? Mm-hmm. A fly comes into play in that scenario. I'm not saying go buy a fly rod and go crazy with it, but it's something to think about because a lot of these shallow water fishers, you go, wow, a lot of people catch them on the fly here. That's due to the fact that they have suspension under crappy skies. Make him look at it. There it is. Make him look at it. Then again, circling back to what I was saying about your crankbaits, close the gap. Inches matter. Minutia matters in shallow water as much as it does in big water. And I think that's so lost so often. Well, they're only 4 feet down, Jay. They're going to come up and eat it. No, they're not. If that was the case, we would never fish anything other than top water on shallow water, right?
Good point.
If you fished a river, why would you take off your top rider? Forget about it, boys. Let's just wing them and fling them. You know, we're fraught with the same problems in shallow water as we are in big water. Tactically, finding these critters. Let's, for an instant, talk about current and its impact. A lot of shallow water can be quick, right? That's when your pocket pulls eddies inside-outside turns. That's going to be your primary consideration. In some of this meandering water that's shallow, something I've noticed that is the kiss of death is fishing edges. If you have moderate rate of flow, it's not really quick, but it's shallow water, you need to be very intelligent about how you're covering the entirety of that because let's say, Jay, we have a uniform 3 to 4 foot depth side to side on a river, right?
Sure.
Why would he be on the edge? What does it matter? Right? Say rocks, some submerged timber, riprap, whatever it might be, creates ambush points.
Yeah.
Now that the entire thing's in play. So, you know, paying attention at clock drills to realize some of these fish will be in the middle. Some will be, let's take for example, one river I fish. It's one bomb cast across from side to side, right? I usually start by pitching the outside, but once that doesn't work, guess what I do on the next drift? I'm going midstream because it really doesn't matter. It provides the same cover. If cover's present and structure's present, then what does it matter? Are we throwing the edge to put some, not structure as far as fishing structure, but structure as far as a formulaic plan? Are we throwing the edge because we need structure in our casting to feel confident?
That's what it is. It's the angler confidence thing. That's right. the age old problem. You know, I've talked to a million guides over a million years that have had clients that have, that quote, get nervous if they can't see the weeds or the, or the cover. So, and you've been there.
Yeah.
You know how it is. It's just like, they feel like they feel like it's a needle in a haystack for what they're having you do right now, you know? Right.
And so, you're going, holy crap, this, what you know, in a lake scenario, it's like throwing points. I hate doing it. I love doing it because I catch a lot of fish. But okay, all right. Don't try to bomb it in, please. Right? It's like if I have, and this is just funny. It's from guiding. Let's say I pull up on a point and I'm looking to dial in on the 8 to 15 range on a point because conditions and seasonality say that's where I need to be.
Okay.
What I watch is the bait careen with the longest bomb cast humanly possible to try to get near the shoreline.
Mm-hmm.
Get me where I'm familiar. Why? They're not there. You're wasting energy, right? You're probably going to foul it up with weeds.
That's like I said earlier, you know, mocking, you know, the Al Linder commercial from decades ago. Don't let luck or feeling determine your fishing success. You know, and it's that luck and feeling that if you can't see something visible that looks good to you, you're not fully understanding what's underneath you and you know captivating on that.
That's a whole other that's the back refer to the two structure fishing podcasts. That's like,
there you go.
Yeah, you don't have to see it to believe it. They're there, it's there, and that's what's going on. But I think in shallow water, you know, a lot of times that propensity, especially on shallow moving water, gotta throw to the edge. That nature cast up the guts treated me really well over the years. You know, fan cast, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. So middle, you know, dead up the center to the side to the edge, 1, 2, 3. Mm-hmm. Where I'm covering that water until a pattern emerges, because these fish don't have a lot of room for variance in where they're going to be, but they're going to take advantage of it based on conditions, right? I've seen a lot of scenarios where middle of the river in good current and fast current is far better than an edge, right? They're set up behind, like a trout, they're set up behind a rock, just sort of snaking behind that thing, waiting for something to come over their head.
Yeah, right.
So that's something to consider there. You know, another thing that I would say is this for pure shallow water anglers, and there's a lot of you, is the figure eight. You're in a different world on a figure eight where the classic is jam the rod down, create a depth change, and bring their head up, right? If we got 3 feet of water, there's not a lot of room there. You've got to be tactical and smart about how you're doing these eights. The one thing I've seen happen in shallow water, more so than anything, is once I've engaged that fish, high speed, regardless of seasonality. Hello. High speed in the eight seems to be the trigger. If he's coming up and we've closed the gap and he's just right at your feet there, I'm going to juice that fish on a pretty flat figure eight, right? Which means I'm squatting down to sort of keep that rod out and keep him going around. That's one consideration, because if I really don't have the maneuvering room to jam this 9 foot, 8'6", whatever it might be, because if I'm fishing shallow water, by the way, I'm actually going to the 8'6" creaker rod, musky shot most of the time. Right. But I'm going to squat down. I'm going to take the proverbial machine gunner stance, Jay. It's what the cool guys do, by the way. The cool muskies, they squat and they act. Got it. Ripping a 36 out of Three Lakes, boys. Gonna tear my pants figure.
A lot of screaming. A lot of screaming.
You know, fattest 38 of the year. But I'm going to take advantage of that flat plane. I mean, and the best way I can say it is that you can't really create that much depth change without getting yourself in trouble. So
yeah,
you've got to really get out there and turn that fish hard. One thing I'll say is this, in true shallow water scenarios, I'm ovaling over aiding. I want to keep that thing going in circles to the best of my ability. Not real worried about the crossover, right? I don't know why that plays for me, but I'm doing the power squat. I'm getting out there, Jay. I'm just throwing the rod out there, big wide circles, turning him, just getting him going. You know,
sure.
But I would say for you guys that have been writing in and asking about this stuff, you know, intelligent bait choice just plays. You just have a narrower scope. You have a narrower scope of baits you can select from, so you need to be really intelligent with what you're throwing out there on any given day. You know, because the same rules are going to apply. And I think what's misconstrued on shallow water is that big and high speed's always going to play, and it's just not the case. It's not the case on any body of water for muskies, right? There's only a small percentage of days where high speed, big presentations are going to work throughout the year. The rest of the time, we're going to be relegated to proximity. We're going to be relegated to hang time. We're going to be relegated to making intelligent bait selections that allow us to really target the demeanor, not only holding depth.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the most important takeaway there. Jay, what other thoughts do you have? Because you're fishing a lot of shallow water, man. How are you addressing holes any differently? What sort of something that you'd throw in here before we move on?
No, not early season. It's more strictly the shallow water stuff, and it's the slack water and the presence of vegetation nearby or emergent vegetation. A lot of dependency too is water level, and like the Wisconsin River near me just in the last week or two just went up about, let's see, I check it every couple of weeks, like 5 or 6 feet. So it's completely full now, and it'll probably remain right there for a while. There's still more snow melting. Some guys from Hurley came in a few days ago, Friday, and I was talking with them.
What kind of
that don't know, that's like 45 minutes, an hour straight north of Minocqua area where the muskie shop is.
What kind of animal did they ride in?
Couldn't tell you. I
small buffalo.
I don't know.
Steve. An American buffalo.
Anyway, you know, we were talking about the snow and the ice and all that and how winter's dragging on, which a lot of people tend to do right now when they're coming in the shop. You know, everyone's just chomping at the bit to go fishing. It's been a long winter. And, you know, I'm like, hey, did you hear, you know, we broke the snowfall record around here. They say 120 inches, you know, more in St. Germain than Rhinelander, by the way. So, and these guys, I said, what kind of snow level? Because they're in the true snow belt. They're up towards the snow belt of Lake Superior. And he was saying 250, 260 inches.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, just an obscene amount of snow. And it's all still up there. I mean, you can't drive on any side roads or anything because they stopped plowing them. So that's all still coming down south somewhere. It's got to go somewhere. Okay. We're going to have it's going to fill the lakes up. Any lakes that were dependent on not full capacity over the last few years, I don't think we're gonna have to worry about that this year. So
be a concern.
Anyway, yeah, well, it's gonna be an interesting year. We're gonna have a, you know, a month from now, I think we're gonna be developing a program on the podcast about, you know, attacking you know, slightly late ice out and how to adapt and when we finally get fishing and we finally start to get in tune with how things have changed and how things are starting to develop this year.
Well, it's one of those things of we've been talking about doing it. It's just not the time yet because you don't want to get everybody's heads in that zone. One thing I'll say to this is like a lot of the considerations we just made for the quote unquote shallow water fishing and shallow rivers, your post spawn, your early lake stuff, think like a river fisherman. Think about suspension. Think about hang time. Jay, one thing I'll tell you is this. Yesterday, before I blacked out, So let's call them like it is, strikes and balls. Yesterday, before I drank 10 Pepsis after half a bag of popcorn all day long,
mm-hmm.
I got Don and Chuck from Figure Eight on the phone.
Okay.
Now, I was pretty into the Pepsis by the time we did this, but we had a good conversation. I'm going to play it here in a second, but I did want to mention something. Very excited about this. The guys at Figure Eight and myself have partnered, and you know, we're never... People ask all the time, who do you work with on for baits? And you guys know, hands down, you know, I work with my buddy Joe. I love Joe. Love his products. Obviously, Livingston Lures with the Titan. That's my baby. But I'm working on a spinner bait specifically designed for pretty much all your round applications with Figure Eight called Steve's Meat Grinders. It's gonna be awesome. It's gonna be awesome. Here shortly it'll be out, and you know we've been talking about it. They called me up and said, hey, do you want to do a bait? And I said, I fish these things all the time. Absolutely. So we worked that up. So I got a few Pepsis in and we gabbed about it. So it's going to be pretty cool. I think I would say maybe a month out on that guy.
Okay. You know? I haven't seen it yet. Yeah, so that'll be cool.
It's Secret Squirrel. Obviously Muskie Shop's going to have it. It's going to be neat. And, you know, over the years we've talked so many spinnerbait mods and stuff we've done or stuff I've come up with and how do I fish them. And this is literally like, you know, they said, Don said, what do you want? I said, I want what I fish. This is literally what I fish. So when you guys see the meat grinder, it's what I throw every day. It's my bread and butter presentation for early season. I yo-yo them in the winter. I catch fish on these things nonstop. So it's not, you know, it's a spinnerbait. Spinnerbaits are spinnerbaits, but it's about the little tweaks and everything we did there. But anyway, Here I absolutely blaringly try to talk to Don and Chuck from Figure Eight. All right, guys, I'm so excited. I've got Chuck and Don from Figure Eight. How are you guys doing, guys?
Good. How you doing, Steve?
Doing great. Doing great. I'm super excited to have you guys on the podcast. You know, Figure Eight, you guys have been around for quite some time. Sort of, Don, tell me sort of the story of Figure Eight baits and what's been going on with the company, some of the models you guys have. What sort of like the flagship of the company? Just lay it out on the line for me.
Well, actually, Figure Eight itself was started in 2008 by a gentleman by the name of Scott Carroll. And Scott recently had gone through a divorce, and I had fished with his baits in the past, and he kind of approached me as far as, you know, purchasing it.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time I had young kids. I'm like, oh, this is a great opportunity for them to understand how a business is ran.
Mm-hmm.
And they found out real quickly that it was working. They were getting tired of getting shish kebab by treble hooks. to put it in a nutshell.
Yeah.
I do have some help when it comes in seasonally. But realistically, it's my wife and I. We pretty much manage the whole thing right now. Here recently, I brought on Chuck Nelson. And Chuck has completely lit a fire underneath my ass,
mm-hmm.
excuse me, and actually has shown me a couple different things that he had in mind.
Yeah,
that it, like I said, it's just a breath of fresh air, and the excitement is there again. You know, to get this thing really up and running.
Yeah,
it's he showed me some color combinations that I love, and we're moving forward.
One thing I'd interject, and Don, you know this as well as anybody, and I've said it on the podcast before, most of the baits that you buy, there's the couple big boys, right? Right? My dear friend, yep. Joe Booker, that's a conglomerate of that makes those baits, right? Or I work with Livingston. That's a big company. We have like the big four or five. Everything else is family-based in this industry. And a lot of people just don't realize that there's a human on the other end of that bait most of the time. You know, where it's somebody that's doing it nights, weekends, they're doing it in their spare time. And I think that's the probably the beauty of the muskie industry as far as like bait production, and also probably the end of things where why is it not available sometimes, you know, like, but that's the thing, it's such a cottage industry because I've tried to explain on the podcast at a certain point, people go, how does this happen? Why do things get so expensive, right? Why are baits so expensive? Well, you go, it's a mom and pop, but what I love about figure eight is the price point. Holy cannoli, is it good? That's the one thing I would say, if nothing else, you guys can hang your hat on. You can put a high-quality spinnerbait, a high-quality double bucktail, a high-quality product in somebody's tackle box without just taking them to the woodshed. And I think that's something to be immensely proud of. Chuck, as far as your experience in the industry, you were with MEPS for quite a few years, were you not?
Yeah, I was with MEPS for, I believe, right around 15 or so years.
Wow.
I was not only a territory manager, but a regional sales manager.
Well, there you go. What are you going to do? So you guys know the blade game. What's sort of the trajectory right now with Figure Eight as far as products? I know I've seen, is Chuck's bait coming out on the market? What sort of some things that are on the horizon with you guys?
Chuck, I'm going to let you handle that one because this one is yours. I actually had been making the blade configuration for over 30 years on a spinnerbait, mm-hmm. and I just kind of kept it hush-hush. No one had seen any of my musky baits and stuff like that I was making. And I thought, you know what, I'm to an age where I'm just tired of modifying baits. And I contacted Don about it and shot him the idea, and he jumped all over it. And we just kind of came with the name of the bomb because mm-hmm. I'd always thought that the way the blade configuration was is that it would go with the blades to hit each other. So it's unlike a lot of the spinner baits out there. I mean, there's nothing like this one. Mm-hmm. And it's like a tick, 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 boom. You're just waiting for that, right. That tick, boom, that tick, boom, boom strike. And that's right. Why that's kind of the little catchphrase, the tick, tick, boom for the bomb. Because the blades are actually running in tandem, one above the other, mm-hmm. Separated by five beads, two number eight fluted blades. So, I mean, you got the lift there. The blades hit each other. They will actually, and Don had seen this, he was throwing this with me when we got together, and the blades actually change direction and spin. You can feel the thump and the hitting of the blades. The mm-hmm. bait doesn't spin or anything, but it'll when the blades do hit, they'll intermittently stop, and the bait will almost like jerk off to the side, mm-hmm. almost like an injured fish. So the thing had done extremely well for me, and some of my buddies said that. Heard about it now, and they're like, you held that from us for this long?
Dude, that's the way you do it, though. You go, I got something brewing, boys. I can't give it all away at once. You know, you got to spoon feed them. It's bottle feeding. You can't handle this in one dose. I'll say this. I've seen it in the musky business, as far as baits, as far as presentation, it's such a cyclical thing. It's this cycle of we go from double tens and we're back to spinnerbaits. And I'll tell you, I mean, obviously everybody knows it's common knowledge. Me and Joe Booker are best friends. And you go, the lineage of like slop masters and the lineage of fishing spinnerbaits for some of these tough conditions. Full transparency, I'm working with you guys. We've got a bait coming out here very shortly called Steve's Meat Grinder, which is meant to get just nasty as you can get. Right? Down and dirty. And I think that's so overlooked in fishing for so many years, where we're going double eights, nine tens. And I look at all these weird bait configurations, right? These exciting new blade configurations. Well, I got a drawer full of parts and pieces. You name a blade, I got it. You could put together a weird configuration, but more so a spinnerbait's going to allow us to get where the muskies are. And I think that's what's so important. Like you're talking about the bomb that's coming out, or Steve's Meat Grinder, some of these spinnerbait configurations are going to get down and dirty. I mean, that's sort of the staple, sort of the bread and butter of figure eight. Would you not say not, like with the boss or what's your thoughts there? Like, are you guys grinding, getting down to the slop, getting down where the muskies are?
I'd have to agree with that assessment. I really would. And one of the things that I found very, you know, that I enjoyed about, like you said, the boss and now the Steve's meat grinder and the bomb is that I can throw it just about anywhere, whether I'm in a river or even on a lake. And I have the same action with it. And if I'm fishing the rivers, it's the first lure that I'm going to. Yeah. I love it, you know. And the action itself is outstanding. And I one of the things I do enjoy about, like, just using the boss is I can change that up between going from, like, a willow blade to a fluted blade.
Right.
And it's nice, quick, and easy, and it's easy to sit there and throw a couple blades in your pocket and work with different color combinations. And I've had fun doing that.
Absolutely. I mean, we did a video last year. It's on the Figure Eight website. If you go to Figure Eight Lures, I believe, is it figure8lures.com or Figure Eight Lure Company? Fill me in.
Figure8lurecompany.com. Yes, I did post your video on that.
We got it up there, and it's me and my buddy Josh Krieger, and we're like, all right. We couldn't, in honesty, like, we could not catch a fish if it wasn't those combos. And sometimes that's what's important, because you said, like, the opera thing, and in a... I would always say, like, I've got my little box, my accoutrement, if you will, of blades, but you said a pocket full of blades. That day I was literally like, okay, I'm trying this. And then the next one, I'm trying this. From reading the water, structural and seasonality, like the probability, I knew where they were at. I had to find the combination that would get them to hit. And it was like, okay, here comes a Colorado. Nope. All right. And it was so quick, was the interchange blade system, because that versatility, I know it's like people overlook that quickness of that snap change, but you go, the possibilities are limitless because a big 10 is going to slow things down. If you put a 10 on a boss, that is nearly a topwater bait. You can boil the surface. Poof, 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 right? You can do some, right. And when I'm guiding in Canada, I can't know how many times I have this one, and it's pathetic. I've got this one, like, it used to be some kind of tequila sunrise fire tiger blade, right? It lays on the deck. It languishes on the deck of my boat, I should even say. And on occasion, I'll put it on a figure eight, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to throw it on top of this reef. Chunk, chunk. I'm barely turning the handle, and the thing's just sort of skittering over, and it gets lit up. This is what I grew up on. This is why I'm so excited to work with you guys, because we didn't have double eights and double tens. We had giant killers and spinner baits. That was it.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Holy crap. If you're rich enough to afford an eagle tail, boys, you could go full tilt. Listen, we mortgaged the house. We bought an eagle tail. We're very excited about the probability. Yep. I hope it pays off. Right. That was it. You were spinnerbait fishermen. I mean, yep. That was it. So, you know, it's very cool, that versatility. And for you guys, I'll say this, fishing on pressured water, especially the last 2 years when we had a certain health crisis in the United States, being relegated to fish some very high traffic areas in the Northwoods, right? So we're filming for Muskie Shop TV, and we're stuck in some very high traffic areas. You go, what's nobody doing? Guess what no one is doing? No one is grinding a willow leaf spinner blade at 12 feet. No one's doing it. But there's muskies there. I can promise you that. Not to get divergent from, say, the spinnerbait thing, though. I do like, and this is another thing I'll just tell you, and I'll throw you a softball here. I always say on the podcast, there's only two things you control in fishing, right? There's two things. Speed and depth control.
Yep.
What I love about rubber core, it's heavy, which allows for a slower presentation, a lower run in the water column. Talk to me about some of the double blade stuff as far as the traditional double bladed bucktails that Figure Eight has, that are going to run lower in their water column, which means we can run them lower, faster, and trigger more strikes.
Go ahead, Dan.
Well, we kind of covered a full gamut from a single blade, you know, which we call the stalker. And the stalker would be kind of similar to what people might be familiar with, would be like the MEPS musky killers. And about the same weight and same size. And then I go all the way up to a size 12 double blade. Well, actually, I call it the double 13, which is a very heavy, and it's got two double number seven treble hooks on it. It's a heavy, it's a beast. It really is. Then with everybody here starting to go more and more into trolling, I actually started weighting some of the lures down. I'm using a quarter ounce weight, and on the JT, I'm using number nine blades, and it is a double bladed unit too. And it's keeping it down. Oh, and like you said, speed is everything. And with some of the reels that are coming out right now, I tell everybody that they have to slow it down. Otherwise,
slow down. Yeah.
Well, that, because otherwise it's riding on the top of the water.
You know, I said on the podcast last week, I just finished my book, and in the end of the book, I'm not giving up the title yet, but it says my 10 musky commandments, right? Number 3 says slow down, slow down, slow down. I think because the equipment is so good now, I mean, I started my guiding creel being a weirdy left-handed angler. I had a 6501 Abu Garcia round reel until like 5 years ago, right? And I look like grandpa out here. Depth control, speed control, that's all you have. Speed control, depth control. But what I've noticed, like guiding Eagle Lake and running the trips in Canada last few years, has been we had low water, now we had high water. Hopefully we have normal weather this year. We've been augmenting baits where you're going, can I get this bucktail to run deep? Because they're on something that's straight retrieved. They're on blades. You got to get it deep. You got to get there. The difference between rubber core and flash boot, as far as the water displacement, as far as its disruptive nature subsurface, is huge. And I think it's really overlooked because a rubber core skirt is going to run lower. It's going to really have mass where flashaboo is just kind of really not augmenting the water in and around itself. And like you said, even if you're running it fast, it's still lower in the water column.
It is still lower.
Yeah. No matter what.
I think that silicone, the rubber skirting is a seriously overlooked skirt material. I think that there's, the guys that are overlooking it are really, and they're, I mean, if you take a look at guys are throwing bucktails. Well, I did a little YouTube video on quote unquote bucktails. Mm-hmm. And I mean, so many of the bucktail guys who are calling bucktails is like flashaboo.
Right.
But I mean, the silicone that inlines the spinners with the silicone skirting, I mean, is what Don has here is, I mean, these things are absolutely deadly. It's definitely a time and a place that guys really need to make sure that they're taking a look at that.
Well, and from my perspective, muskies look forward and up, right?
Correct.
They're always under a bucktail slight until they eat it. We're just looking at belly. Everything's belly. I'm sorry. You know, you look at Titans. We have these wonderful living. We have these beautiful Titans. Muskies have never seen the back of those. We could put dancing hula girls on the back, and it wouldn't matter. It's belly color, but I've seen bison, especially on Eagle Lake or Lac Seul, where it's a differentiation of profile, where marabou might be the thing, but a lot of times the safe bet's going to be rubber core or the silicone skirt because it's a tighter profile with undulation where, like, you can get this very obtuse giant target that overshoots the mark, I think, with flashaboo. Even on, like, and I'm saying this, like, in not self-serving, but I'm going double eights with flashaboo is a far larger, quote-unquote, belly profile than rubber core or silicone because it's just presenting way too much. And you look at why silicone skirt, rubber core is so important in the bass world, where finesse is coming into play. And that's what I sort of gravitate to this, where I go, they're not seeing this. They're not seeing this on pressured water. You could throw in a, you know, a Big Mama. You could throw, you know, a Micro Boss, a Prowl, or whatever it might be, on Three Lakes chain, you know, Eagle River chain, where they're seeing tons of blades, but they're not seeing that profile. They're not seeing that same undulation, because this is just presenting a different profile, because at the end of the day, it's profile, speed, and action. And I think right. You can overcome pressure with a different look. I mean, what are your guys' thoughts on that?
I totally agree. I really do. And I think that it's a great alternative, and it's a great option. Mm-hmm. And you need something else in your box. You really do. And this might be the kick for you.
Yeah. I mean, it's that old adage, you know, everybody's doing the same thing, but I'm different. No, you're not. You're not, you know, it's like, yeah, it's like, you know, I, you know, and I love Joe, and Joe's my best friend on planet Earth, and we text every day. But you know, yeah, they saw a topwater today. They saw a top rider. Okay, let's go with something a little bit different here. For me, where I go, just the blade selection, it's very intelligent. If you go like a Micro Boss and the blade size we're going for, it's all about running low and slow. It's about structure fishing. It's about getting down and dirty where these things are. You know, it's super cool. You know, it's just different. Like the Don and Chuck have been saying, it's a different presentation. It's a different look at things. That, you know, if the norm's not working, the norm's not working. You know, sometimes you got to branch out. I think probably my favorite thing, and I've thrown this quite a bit, is that single blade Big Daddy.
Okay.
And probably my killer on Eagle is the Blue Nickel, right? That single
pattern.
You go, okay, I'm going to throw this on a 5-3-1, and I'm going to turn the handle. And I'm not going to turn it fast. I'm just going to turn the handle. It takes me back to that place, because like you said bucktails. And the operative word in a bucktail is what? Bucktail. Referring to deer hair,
right? Correct.
Deer hair, correct. While it might be hollow, has far less lift than flashaboo. Huh?
Correct.
So we're getting in that zone, and a lot of times the difference between connecting with a muskie and not connecting with the muskie is running depth due to level of light penetration. Right. So having a buck tail, quote unquote, that will run slightly deeper will get you below that level of light penetration, because the trick is this: high speed at depth. I said it earlier, which is we only have control of depth and speed. So something that runs slightly deeper at higher speed is going to trigger more strikes versus something that has to, by its very nature, run higher due to the lift of its material. So, you know, and in full disclosure, you know, I'm working with these guys. It's not systemic of some financial relationship. I called them and said, I love your stuff. Let's make shit together. That's it. The end of the story, which is, this is what matters. These guys figured it out, and everybody else is beating their head off the wall. Right. And at a certain point, you beat your head off the wall and the sheetrock's gone, and then you hit a nail to the cerebral cortex and you're gone. Because you don't catch enough muskies. That's it. Full stop, period. So this material, these configurations allow for, quote unquote, the lift and the light penetration. So when you think about the other element, we have edges. We have weed edges. We have surface edges. We have structural edges. But the most important edge is the light penetration edge. When you're fishing bucktails, if you have a bait that's going to run below that level of light penetration, you're going to catch 10 times more muskies. That's why I'm hyped about this. This is why I'm very excited about this collaboration, sort of this thought process. Don, like when you're making these things, talk to me about the structural integrity. I know the build quality's there. I'm not asking that. It seems like attention to details all over the map, like for other companies, but I've never seen a product of yours come off that was odd. You guys are like hyper-focused, hyper-diligent. from jot and tittle on these things? Is it, what's the standard for a figure eight product?
Honestly, and this might sound lame, but I honestly hope that some person, some kid, catches the fish of their lifetime and they're hooked. And,
yeah,
you know, I really do. And that's kind of the thought process I have with every lure that we're putting out there, is that somebody could catch the fish of their life. Yeah. And you know what? And to me, that's the greatest thing. All of a sudden, I got some kid that's sending me pictures, and you can just, the beaming, you can just sense it. And that's the whole process that goes into it, is that you know that somebody's going to enjoy it. And, yeah, and once you get them hooked, they're there, you know, and then they're writing you letters. They're saying, hey, did you ever consider this? Did you do this? And it's fun. And that's the enjoyment that I get out of it.
Absolutely.
If you were
in it for the money, you would charge what these are worth, but you don't.
You know what? it's fun. It truly is fun. I mean, there's days where it's not as fun, but you know, sometimes I'm not out on the water the way I want to be. But you know, I'm sorry, I'm fishing this week. No.
right. Sorry, but we're not making baits, boy.
It is fun.
You know, at the end, it's like doing the podcast. What you guys are doing. Sometimes you just share the joy and. You've done it so much, or you've spent the time on the water, especially like for me, I've been a guide forever. You know, if I never catch another muskie, I could care less, but that smile, that face, that sense of enjoyment is what it's about. And I think, especially with like a made in America, made from hand, you know, there's fingerprints on every inch of this thing. And there's family, there's blood, sweat, and tears on every inch of it where you go.
Literally, there's probably some blood on some of them.
Oh, dude. Hey, don't. Speaking of family and blood, me and the wife, I got off the boat today. I couldn't go out to dinner with my wedding ring on because I took one of your baits. This is no joke, by the way, to my ring finger. And it took about half a bottle of Dawn to get it off, right? So there's a 36, and he just swung the trailer hook right into my ring finger and went, ah! And I just sort of went, barf. And it didn't come through, so I grab it with vice grips, and I go, and my client, I'm looking the client dead in the face, and he's like, don't do it. I'm like, ah! I'm a musky guy. America. Right, I pull this thing out. It shoots blood all over my pants. Now I have about a hole, like I've been shot with a BB gun on my ring finger. That's my family story. So, you know, if you see me, I'm not the desperate guy at the bar with his wedding ring pulled off trying to fake it. I've been hooked, you know. That's the blood, sweat, and tears of America. But, man, I you know, guys, in closing, I'll shut up. What an awesome company. What awesome people to work with. I've been fishing figure eight for easy a decade now. I you know, Muskie Shop is just piles of these things. They're fantastic. You can't go wrong. I'll be catching up with you guys very shortly on the podcast. Keep your eyes peeled. I know the bomb's coming out. I know Steve's meat grinder's coming out with the most ridiculous collar names of all times. You know me. I'm not going to do anything basic. This thing is stupid, right? It will run through your garbage can and not foul up. So anyway, Don, Chuck, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. You guys are amazing.
Thank you, Steven.
Jaybird, what do you think about the old figure eight stuff there at the Muskie Shoppy? Oh.
The meat grinder. Well, I'm excited to bring that in. That's going to be cool. I mean, you've been a tweaker on those spinner baits for a long time, and it's cool. There's going to be a production model out.
You know, finally, seven people have been asking for it, Jay. Seven people. No, it'll be cool. They're gonna. That's my spinner bait of choice when it comes down to it. Just because, again, tweaking, they have those snaps. Duh.
Yep.
I can just change them on the fly, and I do that all the time on spinner baits, which is cool. So I apologize for how gushing and ridiculous I was, but I had half a bag of popcorn, Jay. What are you going to say to a man?
caramel popcorn?
No,
buttered?
it was just like, I forget to eat sometimes. I've switched, by the way, from the blue cans to the green bottles, right, of Pepsi. From the glass lined tanks of Latrobe. Doing that, and it hit me like a ton of bricks, Jay. I'm kind of a moron, my friend, if you haven't noticed. Kind of a moron. So sometimes I'm like a small child, and thank God I have somebody to take care of me, because I'm
totally Jody Michael.
I'm like a irresponsible child. Anyway, other than that, guys, July 15th, Muskie Shop Bash. Start thinking about it. It's freakishly just around the corner.
I know.
I mentioned it before. I'll mention it one more time, and we'll do a special one here very quickly. The book, it's being edited. It's in its final stages. I've seen the cover. It is the most glorious thing ever. I promise you.
Okay.
Oh, buddy. Pants will be dookied.
Are you releasing the name of it yet? Or is that
yet.
Still a secret?
That's still a secret.
Darn it.
So, you know, they're, it's going to be good stuff. If you enjoy the podcast content, it's all there. It's a labor of love. It's going to be cheap. The publisher we've worked with is basically doing a white label for us, which is going to be cool just to get the thing done. It's going to be awesome. I'm just really excited about it. I cannot wait for the people that listen to the podcast to read this thing and go, oh crap, that's what you meant. That's what you meant.
Right? Yeah.
So if you like this, let me put it this way. If you enjoyed the Structure Fishing podcast, put on your big girl panties. Right? If you like the master classes, guess what, Jay? Buckle up.
Okay.
Put on your helmet. It's going to get real. No, it's really interesting. I've spent a lot of time on this thing. We're going through like the absolute final edits of just making sure it's perfect. I can't stand to have an error in there. I'm sure there'll be one or two, but going for perfection, going for the absolute, like, this is it, laying down the law. Anyway, Jay, here shortly, we said it already, we'll have a sign up for the Steve's Meat Grinder coming up here soon. I think it was Figure Eight making a bit. It's going to be super cheap, and it's just, you know, that's what I fish. If you want to fish like me, get your hands on it. It's going to put some fish in the boat for you.
Cool.
Not trying to push a bunch of stuff, just a lot of projects we've been working on, because I don't sleep. Sometimes I pass out after half a bag of popcorn, though, Jay.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do the podcast on Monday, because you call me like 14 times, and Jody goes, yeah, he's had about 14 Pepsis and half a bag of popcorn. You don't want to talk. Yay! Full transparency. I tried last night, didn't I, Jay?
You gave it a shot. I remember around 9 o'clock. Yeah, we gave it a shot.
It was ugly.
You know what? Let's do this tomorrow. I'm like, okay, click.
Anyway, all right, guys. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, guys.
Say goodnight, Jay Bird.
Night.
So long.